you're the headmaster. Now, Jamie was resisting the flow of life, wasn't he? He didn't want to have to share his talents. He didn't have to possibly have to go in there and flex his spiritual muscles that day in case something happened. He wanted to stay asleep. But his father was telling him, you're grown up. You're missing out on life. Wake up. Today I'm going to talk about gift. The gift that we are given at creation and the gift that we are to wake up to. In the revealing word, under the entry for gift, Charles Fillmore wrote, God's greatest gift to man is the power of thought, which allows him to incorporate into his consciousness the mind of God. Fillmore defined a spiritual gift as the manifestation of spirit in each person according to each person's receptivity. All gifts of spirit are to be used to man's fullest ability. When people become aware of their God-given abilities and develop them, they are led into greater and greater possibilities, slowly unfolding their development of their Christ consciousness into becoming the light of the world. Our friend Jamie in the opening story wasn't manifesting a very high level of consciousness, and his light was pretty dim. In Matthew chapter 25, verses 14 through 30, Jesus Christ tells a parable which describes how people with different levels of consciousness relate to God. It goes like this. There was a very, very rich man who was going on a long journey, and he entrusted his wealth and business to three servants. To the first servant, the wealthy man gave 5 talents, and one talent would be equivalent to like $1.3 million in today's money. So it was a lot of money. To the second servant, he gave 2 talents, and to the third servant, he gave 1 talent, and it said each according to his ability. The first 2 servants were very eager to please their master, and they managed that money well, and they doubled the amount. The third servant, however, was afraid to lose the money that had been entrusted to him, and so he buried it in the ground. When the wealthy man returned, he was very pleased with the first 2 servants, and he said, well done, good and reliable servants. You have been faithful over little. I will appoint you over much. And he promoted them. Then he said, enter into your master's joy. The third servant, when confronted, blamed his lack of success on the wealthy man, saying he was a harsh man. And the servant was afraid that of his reaction if he failed, and so the servant did nothing with the money. The wealthy man was quite peeved with this, and he said, you could have put it in the bank, and it would have at least drawn interest. The wealthy man then took the 1 talent from the third servant and gave it to the first servant, who had done such a splendid job. And then Jesus summed it all up by saying, for to him who has, it shall be given, and it shall increase in him. But he who has not, even that which he has, shall be taken away from him. And the third servant was then thrown into outer darkness. Now this story sounds like an unfair and disturbing situation describing greed and insensitivity. But Jesus is offering an important teaching about our own relationship with spirit. This story is best understood metaphysically. Metaphysically, the wealthy ruler represents God with its opulent gifts, and its wish to share with his servants, which is all of us. This scripture shows how the soul increases in consciousness by knowing God. In order to know God, we must develop self-awareness of our own divinity, of our own divine nature. We are the offspring of divine mind, and we must learn what and who we are in relationship to spirit. The talents in the story metaphysically represent our capacities, to express our innate natural abilities and talents that the divine has created in us to make us unique servants. servant lived in fear of doing something wrong and dreaded the master's wrath. He saw the ruler as unpredictable and volatile. There are millions and millions of people in the world today who believe in a God outside of themselves, far away, who is terrifying, angry, and bipolar. And those people may not take the risk of living a full life for fear of incurring that wrath, or maybe even worse, incurring the disapproval and criticism of their fellow human beings. They are living in a type of darkness. Darkness metaphysically represents undeveloped capacity, an absence of truth or light in consciousness.
Oh, we were talking about darkness.
Darkness metaphysically represents undeveloped capacity, an absence of truth or light in consciousness. The third servant's capacities were undeveloped because he lived in fear and darkness and negativity. When we allow fear and negativity to paralyze us, we place ourselves in our own darkness. God does not bring the darkness. God is omnipresent good. He knows nothing of darkness. As we change our thinking, let go of our fears, and allow the infinite presence to guide us and bless us, we are lifted out of the darkness, out of our own darkness. It is the darkness that many of us have to have in our lives to realize that God is on our side. As we come to trust God as a loving being, we see our value, and we embrace and love ourselves and our talents. As we share our gifts, we realize that we are a gift to the world, and we are a gift to ourselves. I want to tell you the story of how one woman, by changing her mind, became a gift to the world. Helen lived in New York City, and she was a prosperous, well-versed, spiritual woman who was a professor of psychology at New York University. She would use taxi cabs to get around town, and when the taxi cab drivers decided to go on strike one winter day many years ago, she was furious. One freezing day, she got in this jam-packed subway car. She had a stand, but she found a seat that was located over a heater near the door. The subway car smelled of garlic, peanuts, and urine. She sat there, irritated, and she was perspiring profusely. And periodically, every 2 or 3 minutes, she would get frozen because the doors would open up, letting people in and out, and this gush of horrible, freezing wind would come in and blast her. She was pretty much beside herself. The people around her were pretty awful also, in her opinion. One woman had an inconsolable baby who screamed and screamed and screamed. One of the teenagers back then, they would carry these boom boxes, he came in with it on full blast, shaking the windows. And the man next to her had not bathed in about a month. Helen was beside herself with disgust and disdain. Why was she being subjected to this horrible, deplorable, despicable situation with these low-life people? She just could not understand it at all. And so she sat there, fuming, bathing in her anger and self-righteousness. Then she realized that she was making herself miserable. It was her. She was doing it. And so she chose to change her mind. She closed her eyes to recenter herself in a prayer. And as she prayed, with her eyes still closed, this blinding light came up before her eyes, and she saw this vision, and it was wonderful. And she saw a little girl walking toward the light, and it was like the light was embracing her. And she felt this magnificent love and peace and acceptance and forgiveness and joy surrounding her and filling her completely. It was like nothing she had ever felt before. Oh, it was wonderful, but it was so overwhelming that she gasped and opened her eyes. Well, think of what I wrote, and more so, even worse than that, and this is the bottom line, that people would not like me for what I had written. All those things paralyzed me, and I could not get published, no matter how much I wanted to. It wasn't until I came to Unity that I found people who were living their fullest lives. They were allowing God to speak through them with love, peace, acceptance, and joy. They were expressing their gifts freely with me. God used them to speak to me, telling me that I was worthwhile, valuable, and that my talents mattered and were needed. They encouraged me to trust and know that I was a divine child of the Most High. Because of their love for me, I did become trusting, and I began listening to my higher power's call. As I worked through my own fears, my own darkness, I was blessed with the courage to publish that book. Now, I thought that publishing that book would be the end of a long struggle. I had fulfilled my life's dream. What more was there to do? I could now relax and retire and do nothing. However, it was not the end of something. It was the beginning of an adventurous journey. When I took the courageous step to publish, the doors of more and more possibilities began opening for me and continued to open for me. I have been led to give lessons, write for Unity churches, do energy work, and to work toward being a licensed Unity teacher. Now, I'm also the secretary for the Board of Trustees of this church. When I was first approached by the board president to become a board member, I wasn't very happy. I was pretty hesitant because I had heard horror stories from my friends who had gone to other churches, and they had been involved in their board, and they said, "Oh my God, it's a horrible, terrible thing. Don't do it. There's long, stressful meetings, dissension, power struggles, backbiting, strife." Well, I didn't want that to happen to me. I mean, that didn't sound very Christian to me. But I did tell the woman that I would think about it. And so I put my friend's experiences and that appearance aside, and I prayed for guidance. And Spirit's answer was, "Yes, please do it." By being on the board, I have learned that a group of people who respect and care for each other can bring about harmonious and effective results. My own leadership skills have emerged and developed, and it has been wonderful as a way of giving back to this church what I have been so freely given. Our annual meeting is coming up at the end of next month. We have four board openings. I ask you to prayerfully consider placing your name on the ballot as a board candidate. It is a wonderful way to serve this church and the people we love. Spirit's wake-up call has generously given me great blessings and joy because I said and continue to say yes. In the parable, Jesus said that the Master wanted us to enter into his joy. Think about that. He wants us to enter into his joy. God is joy. Spirit wants us to claim our joy. It is ours by inheritance. What gives you joy? What is it that makes your heart sing? I am convinced that when we allow our heart to sing, it is the kingdom of heaven within us. And when we embrace our joy and live that way, we light up the world. And everyone is invited. great light of the world. We are so grateful to know who and what we are, children of the light. And in this quiet time, we pause and affirm our divinity and our wholeness. We are love. As we enter into this quiet time, let us give thanks for the gifts that we have been so generously.